St. Mary.
Get that big step out of here.
Love is in the air, Northeast Ohio.
Soleil, right down Euclid.
Oh. Throw the hammer down.
Cleveland, this is for you.
And we're back. Welcome to King James Gossip. We're down one co-host this week, actually, with Jared Hesketh in Georgia for this week. But we do have a special guest for you. We have Jackson Flickinger with us to co-host with Kyle Hesketh. Jackson's been a regular contributor for our site for, what, 2-3 years now?
3 years.
Three years. So we have him on the entire show, and we also have, obviously, co-host Kyle Hesketh with us. How are you guys doing?
Wonderful.
Doing good.
All right, with that, let's so we always start these podcasts. We break down the last slate of games this week. And Jackson on our site, he's known for these lessons. It's what he does. It's what the Cavs teach us after each game. And so he should be able to give us almost detailed recaps if he can remember all of them. But we started the week with a 13-point win over Charlotte. We continued it with a 5-point win over New Orleans, a 11-point win over Dallas, and a 6-point win over Toronto. If you're listening, you probably realize that by now the Cavs have won 9 of their last 10. They're really starting to click at the right time, and I think I wrote on that the other day, so you can check that out on our King James Gossip site, or King James Gospel site. So how do you guys, what are your key takeaways from the last 4 games, or really just individual games?
I'm going to step aside and let Jackson go ahead, since you are Mr. Takeaways, Mr. Lessons, which I read every single game. I read them all because they're great and they're awesome. So if you guys have not read them, make sure you read them all. Jackson, go ahead.
I appreciate that. From the Charlotte game, what I got just off the top of my head, basically that was one of those games where LeBron's like, I'm not going to let my team lose. That was a game he scored over 40 points, and he had the road crowd cheering MVP, and he also tied Jordan for the most games in a row with double digit scoring in Jordan's building. So I thought that was really cool. Besides LeBron just dominating, I didn't remember anything that really stood out from that game. They held Kemba under wraps for pretty much most of the game until about garbage time when he took the lead for the most points in Charlotte Hornets history, which I guess is cool if you're a Charlotte Hornets fan. But, you know,
it's kind of weak. It's kind of weak because their franchise hasn't been around too long, so I'm sure that tally isn't too high.
Yeah, well, he got it from Del Curry, but so I don't know how it all works with Charlotte's history because, you know, the Hornets moved to New Orleans and they, you know, so like Chris Paul and stuff like that, that's not a part of the Charlotte Hornets history. I'm pretty sure that's just only counts Charlotte, like the Charlotte Bobcats, the present day Hornets, and the previous Charlotte Hornets. So Del Curry was in the lead. And so, yeah, they haven't really had a storied history.
So. Yeah, what I'm looking at, it doesn't have anything about Chris Paul. But my man, Emeka Okafor, is top 10.
Good for him and the Charlotte Bobcats. Where's Adam Morrison on that list?
He may be on the biggest busts of all time list. Him right alongside Anthony Bennett.
Anthony Bennett, did people really even think he'd be that good? Like, nobody was like, this guy's going to be...
Man, who did they take over? Because I remember that specific year, he was supposed to go number 7. And it was weird seeing a guy go from number 7 to number 1. But there wasn't like a clear-cut Karl Anthony Towns first rounder. You know what I mean? Like this year, it's DeAndre Ayton, or it's like there's only 3 or 4 people it could be.
Right. Well, I just remember it was weird because ESPN had like, they have the intros and they show all the draft prospects and stuff. And they didn't even show Bennett as during any of like the highlight clips or anything like that. And I didn't even know who Bennett was. I thought he was, you know, off the radar. I wanted Victor Oladipo, but obviously the Cavs didn't because of Dion Waiters, but I wasn't really a fan of, you know, waiters and
honestly, that draft class was pretty bad. Outside of Giannis, they had Otto Porter, Victor Oladipo, Giannis, Rudy Gobert. I mean, I guess there's just these random players that you see picked under 10, but the top 10 were not very good.
No. But anyways, back to this week. Like, yeah. Anthony Bennett.
I think when I was watching the Charlotte game, I don't think I watched the entire thing, but I just remember J.R. Smith with a beautiful behind the back move, which usually doesn't work. Into the lane. He flicked it up. He made it. And he went on to have 19 points. And that was like one of my favorite J.R. Smith games because he actually looked aggressive, not just settling. And when he was aggressive, it was somehow efficient aggressiveness, which is something I'm not normally seeing from J.R. either.
Well, J.R., like we all know that J.R. has been bad this season, especially compared to, 2016 and 2015. But he still has the ability to be like a microwave and just get hot, in like a blink of an eye. And there's nobody on the bench besides, Clarkson, Korver has the ability to do that, but need to run sets for him and stuff. But JR can just create his own offense all on his own. So, like, I think that game kind of showed why it's important to keep giving JR minutes, even if it's, in small doses, just to see if he can kind of capture something, because he still has worth, even though his numbers, if you were just looking at his numbers, you're like, this guy doesn't deserve any playing time over, Cal Korver or anybody else.
Yeah, and even like Chetty, who shot over 50% from the field, you'd rather have him on the court if you're just looking at straight stats.
Right. Well, I can't see Chetty being in the playoff rotation at all. I mean, we kind of saw this yesterday where it was just in the game yesterday.
Hold that thought. That's one of our main things this week is we have 10 days till the opening playoff series, or at least that's when the bulk of the games start, and we're really trying to get into the rotation later. So let's finish up these recaps. We beat Toronto, Dallas. We should have beat Dallas. We beat New Orleans. I'm pretty sure we held AD soundly without a ton of points. Right. I don't think he was the reason they were close. I think I remember that game because Jrue Holiday almost had the chance to tie it with like 6 seconds left, right? Or something like that.
I believe that was the case.
And then obviously we got to lock down that. And then we beat Toronto 112-106. I think if you take this last slate of games in the full context, I think the only thing that's really impressed me is the defense, which has been something I don't think anybody has said all year. But yeah. We didn't allow 110 in the last four games, which we averaged 108 per 100 possessions. So that was pretty impressive. So what really caught your attention from all the games?
Just specifically the Toronto game you're referring to?
Well, any of them. All four, Toronto. I think that Toronto is really the highlight of the game since we know we'll probably be facing them in the playoffs. So, yeah, either way.
I mean, the Toronto game, what really stood out to me, and this is kind of what stood out the last time the Cavs played Toronto, is that they just simply don't have an answer for LeBron. Like, a lot of people want to, break down, like, Toronto's bench and, how they match up against the Cavs bench or, Lowry and DeRozan. But it's, it simply just comes down to they can't stop LeBron. Like, they have a great team, but, they're just – They just don't have what it takes to stop LeBron. And even Kevin Love, Ibaka isn't the player he used to be. He Love feels comfortable with that matchup inside and outside. And we've seen over and over again, Valanciunas can't guard on the perimeter. Last year, Channing Frye just ate him up, on the three-point line when he was in the game. Love did that when they met 2 weeks ago. This game, he didn't really do as much because Valanciunas was more on Jeff Green. But, the Cavs just have the ability to, get Toronto out of their game. And it's just, I just don't see that being really a series at all, to be honest. Five games if Toronto can somehow pull out one at home. And I don't really see that happening. But I could have said the same thing in 2016 when they pushed the Cavs to 6 games, but I just don't see a performance like that unless LeBron goes through a slump, because they don't really have the secondary scoring they used to have with Kyrie. But I don't know. I just don't see much there, and it really just boils down to LeBron, and they can't guard him.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
Starting Jeff Green, I think, I don't know, I don't really agree with it, but I feel like they're gonna go with starting Jeff Green in the playoffs, and they match up against Toronto. It was weird. At the queue, they announced Larry Nance as the starter, but it was actually Jeff Green. So that was kind of a last minute move, I think, to put him in the starting lineup. But the goal is to have him start on DeRozan, because he did a good job on DeRozan a couple weeks ago. Didn't really do as great of a job yesterday on DeRozan, but I think the Cavs are kind of giving up someone the offensive end for someone the defensive end with that matchup. It's also interesting that they don't trust Hood to guard DeRozan. So there was a lot of talk when we got Hood that, Hood's length and stuff could disrupt opposing teams, but it looks like the Cavs are kind of going away. The Cavs kind of know that Hood's not a lockdown perimeter defender. So I thought that was kind of interesting as well, because I don't think Hood played any significant minutes on guarding DeRozan primarily. So it was basically just, Jeff Green and then J.R. Smith later in the game. So
I think that has a lot to do with the fact that the Cavs' defense is primarily based off of one-on-one assignments. There's not a lot of help going on, and I don't know if that's because they can't help or if Mike Longobardi not knowing how to properly make a defensive scheme where you can help drop, blitz. I hate blitzing, by the way. Hedge, whatever. I just don't think he knows how to coach the personnel that they have in order to have the correct type of help defense. Like I said, it's primarily one-on-one, and I don't know if they trust, like you said, Rodney Hood to guard DeMar DeRozan one-on-one.
Well, I'm pretty sure Ty takes over the defensive responsibilities in the playoffs, but yeah, I don't understand at all what they've been doing in the regular season, especially with the guys that they've had. The blitzing and hedging over those screens is just, a team that's, started off the year as the oldest team in the league. You're blitzing and LeBron's not trying on defense, so you just give up open layups and open threes over and over again. And it's like, that's just a terrible system, especially when you have Kevin Love starting. It's like Kevin Love, we all know Kevin Love isn't a good defender, but they just kept putting him in situations to make him look worse. Like, that's the worst type of defense to play with Love. And,
I agree. And it's easy to hide Love on defense. It's not difficult if you have the right scheme, because even though he was not a great defender, like you said, there's still ways, like Minnesota was able to hide him because of the scheme. If you have a good coach that can have a good scheme, you can hide bad defensive players. Look at the Warriors and Steph Curry.
Yeah.
And it's not that Curry's necessarily a bad defensive player, but he's not as good. Like, I've heard comparisons that he's a top 5 defensive point guard in the league. Like, I've heard that, and I think it's because of how their schemes work to really benefit him defensively.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen, it's not like Love's a horrible one-on-one defender. He holds his own in the post against post players and forwards and centers. It's really the guards that tear him up. And there's no guard in the NBA right now that will not be able to beat a center or a forward.
Well, it's just how it's playing these days.
Right. Like, I remember years ago in 2016, we talked about how great Double T was at being able to switch on the guards. Guards are tearing him up left and right. He's no longer a great switchable player on guards. You can say it's because he's hurt, or you can say it's because he's played so many games and he's been through all these playoff series and whatnot, but it still doesn't change the fact that he's not playing well defensively.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Tristan's just been, those guys who are undersized like Tristan is, he's not a typical center, he's small for the position. And when you just lose a step like that, you become, you know, your shelf life's just completely gone. And, you know, he doesn't really have a whole lot more to give at this point. We saw him play good this week a couple times. Like, I think he can still be, you know, good for 10 to 15 minutes, but you can't play him like 30, 35 minutes like the Cavs were doing the last two seasons. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's clear.
And we've talked about that before on the podcast as well. The problem with Tristan, and I've said this before, is he's never really developed more like an offensive game, or he's never developed more of a fundamental defensive game or rebounding game. It's always been go get the ball, see ball, get ball, hustle plays. And once you get older and you start to, your athleticism starts to diminish, you have to rely on fundamentals. Like, I remember in Minnesota, going back to what we talked about with Love, he was able to catch alley-oops and jump not high, but higher than he is now. But when you work on your fundamentals, like, Love's a great fundamental rebounder because he's able to box out. I hardly ever see Tristan box out. He always gets outboxed, like, every time.
Yeah. Another thing Tristan hasn't been able to do is we saw him working in training camp this year. There was a bunch of videos of him shooting threes and trying to extend his range, not to 3-point, but kind of that mid-range game that Larry Nance has. Mm-hmm. And it's like him just adding that, you know, would have helped out significantly. Like we saw last year in the finals, you know, they just disregarded Tristan, and unless you're throwing him an alley-oop, you know, he doesn't really have, and he doesn't have the gravity coming off, you know, screens that he used to have either. So, but yeah, that's more talk about the rotation.
Yeah, I love where that conversation's head, because it really really gives us a path to our next conversation, and really our first hot topic outside of, because we're also going to talk about what everyone wants to hear, is that's Kawhi's possibility to the Cavs. But before that, I really want to get into how this playoffs and how the rotation is really going to pan out, because we still have a couple players injured, and like we were talking about before the show, it's been really odd because you'll see CeeDee Osman or Chetty playing 25 minutes a night, and then you'll see him not starting and playing five, and then you'll see Jeff Green going from everyone thinks he's unplayable to the coaching staff giving him 40 minutes. And then it's just all around. Jose Calderon, when people start exploiting him in the playoffs, is his defensive weakness and his offensive, like his unathleticism, is he going to even be in the rotation? Because I think historically, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Lou has always opted to go for an 8-man rotation in the playoffs.
That's about right, yeah.
And yeah. I think you have to include LeBron, obviously. You have to include George Hill, Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson, Kevin Love, probably J.R. Smith, and then Larry Nance Jr., and then Kyle Korver. So do you guys think there's going to be any role for like players like Jeff Green and Chetty Osman and Tristan Thompson, and in some aspects even J.R. Smith?
I think that Jeff Green does have a role, and I think he's going to play probably a pretty significant role, probably more significant than most of Cavs Twitter would like, especially in matchups that would, you know, require you to go small. So I think, you know, he's going to play a lot in, you know, a series against Toronto. He's going to play a lot in a series against Golden State or Houston. You know, I don't think he has that big of a role against Boston, but I think this year it's hard to compare it to previous years where like before, you know, in like 16 and 17, you know, you had a pretty clearly defined top eight players. This year, you know, there's a lot of leeway you can go with, you know, like depending on the matchup, you have the luxury of, you know, not playing JR at all for AM series or not playing Kyle Korver, you know, and you didn't really have that in years past. So I think, you know, series like Boston, you know, Tristan Thompson's going to see a lot of minutes and Jeff Green isn't, but you know, it's really all matchup dependent, I think. And that's odd for the Cavs, especially like the last three years where they haven't had the luxury of doing that.
I think for me, I know I kind of asked the question, but I think it's really going to be interesting because earlier on in the season, we saw Lou would, before they really committed to playing Chetty and starting him, he would give him about 7 to 15 minutes per night. And I think you can almost argue that there's more of a role for Chetty at times than Jeff Green. I know Jeff Green's athletic and strong, but sometimes you really, I think I would rather have Chetty Osman and just his tenacity on both ends of the court. But the fact that Green is bigger and the fact that he's more experienced, it's just, it's hard for me to really depict how Lou's going to do it, because it's just been so inconsistent all season. Because it's like one day I'm thinking I'm writing about Jeff Green getting minutes, and then the next day I feel like I'm writing about him out of the rotation. And I feel like it could be the same with just about every player, including J.R. Smith, because I think J.R. Smith used to be one of the fan favorites, but averaging 8.3 points per game, I believe, he's really dropped off the cliff. And I think he only gets 12 to 18 minutes max in the playoffs, especially if he's not hitting. But I think, I also believe that one thing a lot of the fans take for granted is the fact that he can erupt, just like the two games in the finals where he almost single-handedly beat Golden State with like 6 or 7 threes a game.
Right.
So I really do believe that it's going to be less of a rotation, and it's going to be more of Lou spreading out the minutes and then just going deep into who's really hitting in that game. And I honestly think for Lou and the immense amount of talent that they have on the team, that's really the best way to do it. Not sure if it'll be how it goes down, but usually coaches tend to just leave the hot hands in during the games.
Yeah, well, he loves a hot hand more than anybody. You see him, you know, get a lineup that starts working in the beginning of the fourth quarter, like a bench lineup with LeBron, and he'll just ride the whole bench lineup, you know.
Yeah, until like 3 minutes left or something.
Yeah. Well, remember the game 3 against Indiana last year? The Cavs were down a bunch. Then they brought in like Darren Williams, Shump, LeBron, and Channing Frye, and that unit got him back into the game. And Lou ended up riding that whole unit all the way throughout. You know, didn't bring Kyrie or Love back in. So
now one thing I've been thinking about quite a bit is, if you're Coach Lou, who's guarding Durant?
Well, let's hold on a second, because we don't even know if they're going to get out of the West right now.
Okay, if Golden State gets out of the West and it's a fourth repeat, who guards Durant? You just have to answer with one player.
Jeff Green.
You got to put LeBron on him. I know LeBron doesn't want to, but you have to.
And that's kind of why I think Jeff Green's valuable, because he's bigger and stronger, and because you're almost guaranteed to not put LeBron on him.
And I agree with that. I think the main reason we got Jeff Green in the offseason was we saw a potential for him to be guarding Jeff Green come finals time, which is why I like the idea of having Jeff Green. But because of how poorly he's been playing offensively lately, I'm just not sure if he's that playable. And I know no matter what, Tyronn Lue is going to play him. I just worry about him offensively, because like we all know, Kevin Durant's going to get his own. He's going to get at least 20 points no matter what. You're not going to be able to stop him. It's like trying to stop LeBron from getting 20 points. You just can't. The main issue is, can he stop him from getting 30 and still contribute at least 10 to 15 points a game?
I mean, kinda the Cavs offset did, it. The Cavs did win a title with Tristan Thompson playing 40 minutes a game on the offensive end, and, you know, he's not really an offensive, you know, a good offensive player, as we previously discussed. So, I mean, if you have, like, you can't play two bigs against Golden State. So if you're going to play Jeff Green with Love, like, you're not giving up a whole ton on the offensive end than if you were starting like Nance or Tristan Thompson. So, like, I think you can kind of get away with it. You know, we saw last year LeBron, two things from the finals last year. One, LeBron was really good in the first half of every game and then just fell off in the second half because he looked gassed. And the second thing is, we saw that LeBron isn't the, you know, shutdown defender that he was before. I mean, Kevin Durant, you know, torched him 5 straight games. So, you know, no matter what, they're not going to go with LeBron on Durant, maybe, you know, in fourth quarters, but not throughout most of the game. So
Yeah, you're definitely right in how I think everyone would think that that's going to play out.
Yeah.
All right. So we kind of are trying to really pan out or not like display how the next few weeks are going to go. And we'll probably have a much more detailed part next week because it's going to be, that's going to be what, 3 or 4 days right before the postseason starts. So we're really going to start cracking down on it more in detail. But I think with the news of Kawhi Leonard, we just kind of have to go into that. Like, I just want to talk about that this week. And I think we all think that it could be a possibility. I think Windhorst and Zach Lau kind of, I think they've talked about it and tweeted about it. So do you guys see any Kawhi Leonard to the Cavs rumors sparking up this offseason?
I do. I mean, the Cavs, you know, they can't offer him the best package, but they may be able to offer him the best package available. You know, I've seen a lot of things about, you know, the Lakers and Celtics are the two teams that can, you know, offer the most for Kawhi, and that may be true. But the thing is, with these trades, you really never know what another team wants. You know, like, do the.
And especially because the Spurs, because they're not really the blockbuster type of trading team.
Right. Like, I mean, there's been reports that the Celtics aren't going to trade Brown or Tatum, which I think is foolish. But, you know, you can't tell, do the Spurs value Brown and Tatum like the Celtics do? You know, do they value, you know, Lakers players like Randall, Kuzma, or Ball? Like the Lakers do. So it's just tough. It's like trading, it's like giving somebody a gift. Like, you never really know what the other person wants, and giving them a draft pick is like giving them a gift card. You know, like when you have a draft pick or a gift card, you can just get whatever you want, you know, and the Cavs have the ability to give the best gift card, you know, like besides the Suns, really, there's no other team in the that top 10 range that really should make a move for Kawhi. And so, you know, I mean, like the Lakers don't have a top pick in this year's draft. The Celtics don't have a top pick in this year's draft. So, you know, I think the Suns are a team that could make a move if they really wanted to. You know, the Suns are always trying to kind of hit a home run. I thought that the Suns were a team that could make a move for Kyrie, but they didn't. But I mean, if the Suns wanted to give up Jackson and, you know, a pick, or Jackson and Warren, like, you know, there's a possibility Kawhi could end up playing on the Suns, and you'd have a pretty good team next to Booker. But I mean, I really just don't see a path.
So secondly, because I see you really going into like who else would want to trade for them. What would the Cavs have to give up besides this pick? And if you're Cleveland, at what pick do you say, nah, we're not going to trade it if it's 3 or 4, because we could get Porter or Bagley with that?
I don't think, and I saw there's an article on our website, if you guys want to go check it out, by Quentin Alberti about potential trade ideas for Kawhi. Looking at all those ideas, I don't think the Cavs have enough to give for Kawhi. If you look at what the Rockets traded to get CP3, CP3 is on the decline, I guess, if you could say that. I mean, he's still incredible. He's still one of the best point guards in the league, undoubtedly. But how much they gave for Chris Paul is almost what you'd expect the Spurs to ask for Kawhi Leonard. So I just don't see us being able to get Kawhi Leonard because of how much they'll be asking for it. Like, a first-round pick in Tristan Thompson, which was something that Quentin had suggested, would not get you Kawhi Leonard in my mind.
No.
A first-round pick, but Tristan Thompson and Jordan Clarkson would not get you Kawhi Leonard in my mind.
But a first-round pick, Jordan Clarkson and Chetty Osman, might get you a first-round pick. And that, yeah, they have the pieces. I'm not sure it's worth. It's kind of like the whole, if Houston loses, was it really worth giving up players like Harrell and Decker and Beverly and a pick and. It's, you really have to balance it out.
And that's kind of where I was going with it. Like, if the price was, let's say, the Brooklyn pick, Clarkson, Hill, and Nance, I don't know if I'm Cleveland, if I would actually want to do that. Why would you want it? You have two young players that you're going to give up, along with George Hill, who's a smart, cerebral, and still athletic long point guard, and then a potential superstar in the Brooklyn pick. I don't know if I'd give that up.
I would. I'd give it up in a second. I mean, you get a guy who, before this, you know, before everything happened this year, people were talking about, you know, this being the year that Kawhi overtakes LeBron for best player in the league. And while, you know, I'm a big fan of LeBron, obviously, but, and that's a little far-fetched, but it wasn't like, you know, totally crazy to actually think that. So, I mean, if you had a core of LeBron, Love, and Kawhi, I mean, you have a great offensive team and you have the makings of a good defensive team. Like, you're not going to beat the Warriors unless if the Warriors are fully healthy. You're not going to beat the Warriors with Kevin Love and LeBron and a bunch of really good role players. You're going to beat them with top-end talent. And if you can get top-end talent like Kawhi Leonard, then I think you're in a better position to face those teams like Houston and Golden State. So, I mean, I'd give up. I'd give up basically anything.
Well, tell me this. Then how is it that Houston is able to beat Golden State and they only have technically two star players?
I mean, they haven't beaten Golden State in the playoffs. I mean, like, teams like Golden State, like, you can't judge them off of what they're doing in the regular season. It's like trying to judge the 2016-17 Cavs off of last year's regular season. It's like that team's been to the finals four straight times. You know, Houston plays that game like it's a playoff game, and Golden State plays that game like it's another game in December, and they're just waiting to get to April and March, man, on May. So, I mean, if the Warriors are fully healthy and the Rockets are fully healthy and they play in a playoff series and Houston wins, then I'd kind of entertain that point, but I just don't see that happening. You know, top-end talent is what wins you those playoff games, especially in today's NBA. And if you can get one of those top-end guys, I think you move anything and everything for him.
I see where you're going with it. I'm just not sure if it's worth giving up four assets for that one player. I mean, especially Kawhi's great, and I would say he's top three, definitely, maybe top two player in the league when he's healthy. The other issue I have with Kawhi is he does have an injury history, a big one. He has missed a long time, and he's missing this whole season. He's just, I'm not sure, like right now, the Celtics were really happy they got Kyrie. But now he's out for the first round of the playoffs. And I know he's their future, and there's potential that he stays and he leads them to another finals run. But you where I'm going with this?
I get what you're saying, and I think as fans of the Cavs, we're kind of spoiled because we have LeBron, and the most he's ever missed was 2 weeks. And he didn't really even need to miss 2 weeks. He just missed 2 weeks so he could hang out in his house in Miami in 2014. So, like, I mean, if you look at all the big players, they've all missed significant time. You know, Steph, he missed significant time before he got, you know, before he became MVP, you know. Kevin Durant missed a season before, or most of a season before. You know, Russell Westbrook's missed time. You know, you can just go through the list, you know, DeMarcus Cousins, Kyrie Irving. So it's like Kevin Love even. Mm-hmm. So, like, I get what you're saying, and you don't want to get like a guy like IT who you know has like, you know, is never going to come back from an injury. But unless you know you think that this is a career altering injury for Kawhi, then I think you make the trade. You know,
well, I mean, I agree with you, and you mentioned Steph. Well, Steph's been having these problems when he got his ankle surgery 4 or 5 years ago. It was supposed to negate any problems that he would ever have. And look at him now. Three ankle injuries in the same season and now a knee injury. So there's that. And that's the whole reason that Steph was on that team-friendly deal for a long time. And then he proved that he was going to be healthy, and he got that massive deal, and now he's hurt and out for the first round.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, but as long as you don't get somebody who's, you know, has had serious injury issues like Derrick Rose or Isaiah Thomas, I think you got to make the deal because it's, you know, basketball, you know, you don't really have that long of a shelf life in basketball. And while you have a player like LeBron, you know, you've got to put the best known pieces around him. So, you know Kawhi Leonard, when healthy, is one of the best players in the NBA.
Absolutely.
And, it's like, while LeBron is still in his prime, like I've been saying, like, oh yeah, well, LeBron's only going to be in his prime for like 3 more years. That was back in like 2012. So, I mean, we don't know when LeBron's prime's going to end, but while it's still going on, you got to surround him with the best possible players. And, you know, I give up everything for Kawhi.
You have to think that a Kawhi and LeBron James-led Cavaliers would almost single-handedly be able to take even three other mediocre shooters to a finals easily and be able to compete, unlike they really did last year.
Oh, for sure. I mean, like the Cavs, two of the most productive players the Cavs got this year were, you know, Jeff Green on part of the mid-level exception and, you know, Jose Calderon on the vet min. And it's, you know, it's kind of like you have LeBron and Kevin Love, and you put three other guys, you know, three other NBA quality players on the team, you're going to have a great offense just because of LeBron and Love. So just imagine adding Kawhi, like, you know, you have those three and just any point guard who can, you know, kind of stay in front of defenders and, you know, not get in the way of the other three. You're going to have a great team. So to keep, you know, the depth that you have, but you trade depth for, you know, Kawhi.
And I do agree with that for sure. I think if you put Kawhi on the team instead of Kyrie last year, like if you were to trade their spots right there, I think we're winning that finals last year. Because on top of Kawhi being a great offensive player, he's 10 times the defensive player that Kyrie will ever be.
Yeah, I mean, he's the best defensive player in the league, for my money.
Absolutely. So.
All right, so I think we have a lot of split things. I think it all comes down to the package for me, and I think that's kind of where we're going to leave it for now. We're going to leave it before we get too much. We're going to have to see the rumors play out, and maybe we'll have you back on if the rumors pick back up in the offseason to discuss it a bit more.
For sure.
But for now, we're going to head into so we do a little game segment. I feel like the reader or the listeners probably enjoy it. It's couple questions. You tell me, obviously, if it's fact, you think it's true. If it's fiction, you think it's false. Kind of obvious, but some of these questions are kind of tricky.
I wish Jared was here so I could beat his ass again.
Yeah, Jared's not very good. Jared's 16-15, and Kyle's 23-10.
Ooh. All right.
So it's been a rough go for Jared. Hopefully he'll listen to this and get mad like he usually does. All right. Question number one. This has been the only 5-game spurt of the season that Cleveland has not given up over 110 points. So they've held their last 5 opponents to under 110 points, and that's the only time they've done that for 5 straight games.
I'm going fiction.
I'm going to go fiction as well.
It's fiction. I kind of thought that one was easy because most people remember that 13-game win streak, and you would just assume that one of those games or 5 straight of those games were under. And I believe that's when it was too. So it wasn't, that one wasn't crazy.
Yeah. I wrote some great articles about how the Cavs defense was fixed because of Cavalier lifer Dwayne Wade. That didn't really hold the test of time, but yeah.
Okay, round two. The Cavs have the best offensive rating over their last 10 games.
Like the best in the league?
Yes, sir.
Fiction.
Fiction.
Fact.
Wow.
I looked I actually knew that one off the top of my head because my arc of last night was when the Cavs are really clicking. Like I talked about how they're clicking at the right time, winning 9 of the last 10. And that was one of the facts I used is that their offense is really coming around. And it's at like, I believe it's like 114 net rating or something.
Kevin Love and Jose Calderon, unstoppable pair.
Dynamic duo. Yeah. All right. So we got the Cavs gave up 6 free throw attempts to the Pelicans two, three games ago. That was their lowest amount given up to their opponent all season.
Fact.
That's got to be a fact.
That is a fact. The second lowest was, I believe, 8, and that was just sometime midseason.
6 is low.
Especially with Larry Nance on your team.
Yeah. If LeBron James played in 80-plus games, it'd be the first time in his career.
80-plus?
Yep.
I feel like he's played 80 before.
So,
I'll say fiction.
Fact.
It is fiction. He played in 81, just missing the last game a couple years ago.
What year was that? Do you know?
08-09.
Okay.
His second to last year in Cleveland during the first time. And he actually played 80 his sophomore season.
Okay. I knew so he had it recently, but yeah. That 09 team was probably the best Cavs team besides, you know, these last couple of years. That was a good team.
So 4 games left. All 4 games are within this next week. And to end it, we used to call it the 21 Shump Street Picks of the Week. Sad face, Shump left. I kind of still like Shump, so let's keep his thoughts and prayers with our podcast. But we have to power through this, guys.
I don't know. All right. How to do it.
Washington at home, Philadelphia away. That's a back-to-back. And then away at New York, New York Knicks, yes. And then home at New York. Man, I think I'm going 4 straight wins.
Yeah,
again.
I'm
going
to do the exact same thing.
You did that last week and it worked.
I'm doing it too. 4 wins.
I'm going to hedge mine and say 3. I think they dropped the first one to New York. So they're going to beat Washington and Philadelphia back to back, and then we're going to think they're going to go into the playoffs on a roll, but they're just going to drop one to New York for no reason.
And given how this season's gone, that's probably the most Cavs thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, last year they blew a 20-point lead in the fourth quarter to the Hawks on the last week of the regular season, so anything's possible with this team in April before the playoffs.
All right, well, I think that's all we got for you listeners this week. That was a really good show. We really enjoyed bringing Jackson on, and hopefully you peek at our website, check out his articles. He does a lot of the lessons, not after every game, but the majority. And they're really good. So thank you for coming on. And you have any last words for our listeners?
No, go Cavs.
All right, you heard it here first. Cavs going to win it in 5 this year.